Back on Downtown Halloween edition of the program. Rich Kimble here with you, and our next guest on the program is a talented musician, artist, and writer who has got a terrific new book out called The Good People and the Bad. We're happy to be joined by Peter Orr. Peter, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Rich. It's great to be here.
Well, I've enjoyed your work. I really loved it. Actually, Carrie gave me a copy of Stay Out of New Orleans several months ago, and I love that book.
Well, yeah, that's good advice, if nothing else.
Absolutely, yeah. I especially like the story of the author, P. Curran, of course, billed as the author of Stay Out of New Orleans, and then revealed there that he was unmasked as Peter Orr, an unpopular nightclub entertainer.
Yeah, that's being kind. Yeah, people didn't know. The name P. Curran, I write through pen names a lot. I just always have, I guess because I worked in magazines. But I'd been using that name, P. Curran, it turns out, since the 80s. I didn't realize that. Somebody sent me an example of something I'd published with that name in the 80s. It's my grandmother's maiden name, Curran.
Oh, nice. So. And so the new book is credited to, was it Shea Leitrim? What's the story there?
Shea Leitrim. Well, the immediate thing is that this book is so horrid, I didn't want my pen name to be on it either. Leitrim is a county in Ireland that's actually, it's very close to where the legend that the book is based on comes from. And I used the name Shea. I think I was trying to keep it indefinite so that people couldn't tell if this was a male or female author. Although I think once you read the book, you can tell it's a guy wrote it, you know?
Well, I did not know what to expect after reading Stay Out of New Orleans, and this was nothing like that. But man, oh man, so we meet Eddie O'Kane, a young guy who all of a sudden finds himself in 1978, a world I remember pretty well. I was about the same age as Eddie was back in 1978. And then things begin to go wrong very quickly, and it's one bad choice after another for him.
Yes, that's exactly it. And he's actually he's inspired by a character named Teig O'Kane, or Teig O'Kane, an Irish character. But they weren't as specific in what you did wrong in Irish folk tales. You know, we want to know why somebody's evil, so I had a show, you know. And he's a sad luck case, I'll tell you that. But, yeah, it just gets worse and worse as he goes along.
One of the things I liked about the book, I teach high school students, and you did such a great job of capturing the way they speak, the way they interact with each other.
Yeah, I really thought at the time, you know, I wanted this to be horrifying. The scariest thing that had ever happened to me was going to high school. So at that point, that's what I used. And it's very claustrophobic. I think, you know.
Yeah, it's that, and I found it to be also pretty cinematic, too, although if it were a movie, I would probably hide under the seats.
You know, from your lips to God's ears, yeah, I'd love to see this be made into a movie, but yeah, if it is, it'll be heavy on effects.
Oh, no question.
Back in the 80s, I was a managing editor at Fangoria, which was a horror movie magazine. It was the biggest horror movie magazine there ever was.
Right.
And so I very much see things through that lens of, like, horror movies are supposed to have lots of practical effects made out of latex and looking really gross. So there's lots of opportunities for that.
There are indeed. We're talking with Peter Orr here on Downtown. His new book is called The Good People and the Bad. What makes for good horror from your perspective?
Well, it's not something that's going to boil down into an easy recipe. One of the things I think you notice if you look at horror movies over time is that the term horror movie gets applied to different things. You know, it's different subject matter. We don't wind up with the same thing coming back over and over. What a lot of people object to horror movies based upon the ones they see at one particular time. A good example would be in the 80s. Nobody wanted to see these. You know, you had all these slasher movies, and everybody was trying to distance themselves from them. But the real problem with it is really just that it gets boring. Once you've seen a Friday the 13th type movie, you're not going to sit through a second one. You know, you're sitting there tapping your toe the whole time. Whereas you see, suddenly it'll become popular. We've seen a bunch of folk horror movies in recent years. And then you've got to keep coming up with, I guess it's the element of surprise, but it's got to come at younger audiences because they're really important to horror. They bring an energy to it, you know, and you just got to keep surprising them. And you're not going to do it with the thing that scared, you know, people just 5 or 10 years older than them. Well, you know, you got to keep throwing curveballs.
Well, and you sure did in this book. And a couple of things that I really liked. One is that there was, even as a lot of bad things were happening, there was a sense of normalcy, I think, made up by the people that Eddie encountered along the way. And that helped to make it extra scary because you could relate, you could see yourself in those situations. And then when, and I don't want to give anything away here, no spoilers, but when Eddie faces the consequences of his actions, yeah. I did not see that coming at all.
Yeah, that comes right from my grandmother, if you want to know the truth. I had a grandmother who was off the boat, and she absolutely believed in those things. She absolutely believed in, you know, the cliche sort of, it's not quite the way it ends up on American television, but the people from Ireland of her generation really believed that these things were possible. So somehow it just floated into me. I don't know.
Well, I've got those Irish roots myself. Maybe that's why it scared me so much, because I was thinking of my ancestors in Ireland.
Yeah, that could be. That's absolutely. You're really warming my heart here, Rich. Truly, I'm glad to hear that. I have to say, I've been worried that the book isn't scary.
Oh. You know?
And I think I'm glad to hear a vote, an objective vote that says I need not worry about that.
No, I thought it was very scary, but also to me the best kind of scare, which is, you know, not always the jump cut kind of scare, but the scare that where the skin sort of crawls, the hair stands up on the back of your neck, and things just don't feel right as you're reading that book. And boy, when you can convey that in a book, I think it's easier to do that in a movie because you've got that visual experience, you've got sound, you've got music. When you can do that in a book, boy, you're onto something.
Wow, thanks. I'm glad you're really, you know, this really makes me feel good to hear you say that. It's true. The other thing is that with a movie, people can just keep sitting there, so you can bank on getting away with it not working a little bit. Whereas with a book, once people get bored, they put the book down and it doesn't come back up. They don't read it again. You know what I mean? Once a book has bored you and putting it down, an act of Congress won't get you to pick it back up.
Well, what I did with the book was I read it in two sittings. I wanted to read it all in one, but I knew I would have horrible, horrible sleep if I continued to do that. So I did it in two segments, but I couldn't put it down. One, because I wanted to find out what was going to happen, but the other because I was scared out of my wits and I didn't want to shut off the light.
Oh, I should be quoting you on the cover. Gosh. Yeah, it's trying to go. I'll tell you, one of the things that I'd been learning right before that, because this was the, I actually wrote this book in 1994. And it just wasn't, first of all, the horror publishers at that time just put a hand right up at me when I came at them with this book. We don't want to publish this. But one of the things about it was that I'd been studying Jim Thompson, the crime writer, the guy who wrote The Getaway, things like that. And it just was mystifying to me. How could he write these novels that would make me want to sit and read them all in one day, read the whole thing in one day? How did he do that? And so I was really trying for that. with this book, and I didn't think I'd made it. I didn't think this book would make you want to sit it and read it that quickly, but it seems to be doing okay. People seem to be having responded to it that way, like you're saying, you know, like you could do this in one sitting.
Oh, there's no question about it.
It's good for a plane trip, you know?
Oh, yeah. And that's funny you mentioned that. That's where I read the first half was on a plane.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's an endorsement.
But then I thought, I gotta fly home, and it's going to be late at night, and I'm going to be thinking of these things as I come in the house. So I waited until I got back home to read the second half in the comfort and relative safety of my home.
Well, you're in Maine. Maine has a long, noble history of horror stories, so that's the best place to be reading it.
Oh, I think so. There. So I'm wondering, Peter, because you do so many artistic, creative things. Do they all do they all scratch a different artistic itch for you?
Yes, I think you're right. I do think that's true. I don't really have that much control over what I do. I'm kind of driven to it. I certainly create out of psychological need, but I don't get to pick which one. Like, I'll set time away and say, okay, I'm going to paint next week, and somehow I'll go through that whole week without painting anything. But then I'll get an editorial deadline where I have to have something ready 3 weeks from now, and suddenly I can't get away from the easel. And I don't know what it is. I think with music, it was easier to get me to stick to things because I had this, you know, I had to go to these clubs and be performing at these specific times. And it's also just very easy for me to sit around with an instrument in my hands, you know, whereas, you know, to actually write and to actually paint, I have to be self-starting, and the part of me that starts it, I am not in charge of. It just sends me on its own.
I do have to tell you that I went back to reread a couple things to make sure I had my thoughts in order. And I don't want to give it away, but you'll know what I'm talking about. I was reading a specific part of the book that I found incredibly harrowing. And at just about the right moment or the wrong moment, my dog let out this big yawn that
I'll be honest with you. When I went to write this, at the outstart of it, I had the idea that I wanted to write a Stephen King book. I mean, you can kind of see that. And it's like the Stephen King books that I was reading in high school in the late 70s. It's similar to the things that he was doing then. I'm not saying it's similar in that it's as good, but it's obviously inspired by those things. And he has spoken a number of times about how he'll have something that he puts in the book, and then he dreads having to write it, and then he dreads having to rewrite it. That definitely happened.
Oh, wow.
I did not want to rewrite that scene. And there's a couple of them in there that I, you know, you'd be sitting there going, all right, tomorrow night I'm going to get up to that part with blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, it's just typing. I'm just going to type it. But it is harrowing. I don't know. You know, because you're scaring yourself
at that point.
And you don't know that anyone else is ever going to see it.
Well,
you're doing that. You go between thinking no one else will ever read this thing I'm working on and, oh, the whole world is going to see this and they're going to be teaching it in high schools, you know?
Well, it scared the hell out of me, and it's one of those books that stays with you, too. You don't put it down and forget it. You keep thinking back on several of the characters in the book and their fate along the way.
Oh, wow. You know, again, I'm gonna have to quote you on the cover. I'm calling my designer immediately. I'm glad to hear that. I wanted to kind of stick with you because when you give people something that they can use to scare themselves with, they remember it, you know, and it inspires lifelong loyalty for having done that. I mean, there are things that I scared myself with back in the early 70s that I get into arguments with people to defend it, you know. It really gets a kind of loyalty because it's such a personal thing, and I think it surprises us when we get somebody else can help us scare ourselves when we're alone.
Well, it's terrific. The book is called The Good People and the Bad. How can good or bad people get their hands on a copy, Peter?
Well, at this point, it's definitely online. I don't know. It's up on Amazon. It's up on the services. One thing I'm noticing, though, when you put in the title, I'm going to have a net guy come in here, an IT guy come in and fix this. But when you put in the title, The Good People and the Bad, it keeps giving you all these self-help books about when bad things happen to good people. So you have to put the name Shay Leitrim in with it. You have to type in, like if you go on Amazon and you hit the search window, you put the title, but also put Shay, S-H-E-A, and Leitrim, which is a county in Western Ireland where my family comes from, L-E-I-T-R-I-M. But yeah, that's where it is for now. And it's also, it's available through bookstores. So if you order it, you they're not going to just carry it everywhere. But if you go in and you order it at your bookstore, they will order it through their services.
The book is many things. I would not describe it as a self-help book, though.
No, it's not. It does not sit well with those books at all. But it was kind of surprising to me. I get, you know, again, I'm being really solipsistic, but when I put the thing in and saw that coming up, I was like, no, that's not going to be recommended alongside that.
Well, I enjoy getting scared like nobody's business and reading The Good People and the Bad. And it's great to talk with you, Peter. I really appreciate you making some time for us today and wish you good luck with the
book. Oh, it's my pleasure.
I'm glad Carrie got us together. It's what he does.
That's indeed what he does. I just saw him recently, actually. I really like that guy.
He is all right. We like him,
know,
too.
He's become more or less my neighbor in recent weeks. So, you know, but still, you know, available to all of us.
Absolutely. Well, Peter, thanks again. Good talking with you. And I hope we can do it again down the road.
Thank you so much, Rich. I look forward to it. It's been great. And happy Halloween.
Thank you. And the same to you. Peter Orr with us here on Downtown. The book, not a self-help book, The Good People and the Bad.